Morning, everyone.
Morning.
Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. This is the second of five cases on our calendar this morning. The case is Lisa Thielen et al. Versus Eden Valley Sportsmen's Club in Meeker County Zoning Administration. And the case number is A210634. Before we get started, I do want to just clarify the time that respondents' attorneys will be taking in the case. It's my understanding that Mr. Anderson would like 10 minutes to argue, and that Mr. Lysico would like 5 minutes to argue during that 15-minute time allotted for respondents' counsel. Is that correct?
Your Honor, Mr. Anderson, that is correct. Mr.
Okay.
Lystico and I have spoken about that.
That is correct, Your Honor.
Okay. So just to clarify before we dive into your arguments, Mr. Novak, you will have 15 minutes to present your argument. Then we'll hear from both counsel for respondents, and then Mr. Novak, you will have a 5-minute rebuttal. Okay.
Sounds good.
Okay. And with that, Mr. Novak, you may proceed with your argument.
May it please the court. American courts determine the issues before them. When a case has been disposed of, a court should not give advisory opinions on issues not necessary to the disposition of the case. Having said that, and also having worked for a number of years for a court, I understand why a court sometimes answers questions in the alternative. But you have to think, what kind of morass am I going to create if I do that? Turning to the appeal before us, the court specifically dismissed the case against the county for a lack of proper service. Assuming for a second that that decision was correct, Meeker County was gone from the case. If this court determines that that dismissal was correct, and you have to remember there were two dismissals in this case, this one for lack of probable service, and that was without prejudice. The second dismissal, based on estoppel, was the dismissal with prejudice. If this court then decides it does not have to reach any of the other issues in regard to the county, Mrs. Thielen and her fellow plaintiffs will be deprived of the right to file again against the county. Therefore, the morass created by the district court is this court has to reach the issues it might not have to have reached if the disposition had ended when the decretal of the court below came. The next issue this court would have had to reach anyway, the court below ruled there's no cognizable claims currently before the court since mandamus relief has not been pled. Summary judgment is appropriate. There are four claims capable of being judicially heard and determined. Did the club violate the requirements that it complete significant work on the premises within 1 year? If the answer to number one is yes, does that make the cup null and void? But did the construction endanger public health, safety, comfort, convenience, and general welfare? And fourth, did the construction make it impossible to protect 595th Avenue with a fence? The claim that the district court said was missing was a claim for mandamus. It specified that it was talking about action under Minnesota Statute 586.01. Nowhere in 586.01 does it state that it is an exclusive remedy. Nowhere does either.
So if I counsel may interrupt for a moment. I was trying to take note of the four, you described them as four claims, or I'm not sure what the, although the second one sounds like it's subordinate to the first one. Is there a violation of a CUP? I didn't quite get down what you said. And then you said, is a CUP therefore null and void? The third one I didn't get noted in time. What was the third one that you claimed?
The third one is, did this construction that's done so far endanger public health and safety, comfort, convenience, and general welfare?
Okay, so I want to, those are questions that you've posed. I want you to tell me what the cause of action is. What is the statutory or common law cause of action that you are asserting in this case against the club? The county you're arguing on the merits, at least, if they're out, and I understand you have an argument about that, but let's put the county aside and say that the club, what is the cause of action? Is there a statutory cause of action that gives a private right to sue the land owner for what you're alleging here?
Well, I don't know of a statute, Your Honor.
Okay, what's the common law cause of action?
It's to protect from an injury that would likely happen.
What does that mean? What are the, you know, well, what are the elements of the cause of action? Normally we identify a cause of action, know what the elements are. We can figure out if they're met, you know, breach of contract or tort or emotional distress or what have you. I'm trying to understand what the cause of action is against the landowner here.
I'm not sure what the title of the cause of action would be, but if my neighbor's shooting across my property, I certainly have some cause of action to stop him from shooting across my property.
Don't you need to identify, though, as a plaintiff bringing an action, what that cause of action, in fact, is so that it can be evaluated by the district court? You may well have one in what you described, but I presume then there's like a nuisance action or something that you would have a right. But what you're talking about here is, I think, just a member of the public. I think you talked about that the plaintiffs, you know, are just acting on behalf of the public bringing an action against the landowner for not conforming with a CUP. And I'm wondering what that cause of action is.
These are 15 neighbors that live next to the shooting range that do not want rounds coming through their house. I guess it's a protection against a battery or an assault.
And were those issues? I don't recall seeing them briefed at all as theories of the case, that this is, I don't see that in the complaint or brief.
They were. I'll see if I can cite you to the page here, Your Honor. I can't cite you to the page, but they were laid out under the Roman numerals that they were in the petition, in the initial brief.
Mr. Novak, why wouldn't the respondents identify this in their brief? The short answer to Judge Smith's question be a writ of mandamus, which was not brought here.
Can you say that again, Your Honor?
Why is not the short answer to Judge Smith's question, and that's the point respondents make, and I believe the judge referenced it as well, that if they have a concern that a CUP is not being enforced, that's specifically what the writ of mandamus under the statute provides for.
Well, because the plaintiffs were not suing a government entity or a government official to perform a duty, they were suing to stop the faulty construction.
Well, can I just ask you then, and I saw that in your brief a number of times that your clients were not interested. The county was only brought in as a party because they have an interest, I think is the phrase that's used in the brief. Yeah. Going back to your first point procedurally, if that's the case, and if we agree that with the court that the county was not properly served, so that was a proper dismissal, why is it not proper for the court to then separately address the summary judgment motion of the party which your client really had an interest in, which is the sporting club itself?
Well, we agree. As to the club, the court had to reach this issue. So we're not saying that it shouldn't reach this issue towards the club. What we're saying is that in the averments, we raised four issues that we wanted stopped. Both the allegations and the remedies were aimed at the club. And mandamus was not proper because we were suing a private entity. And even if you could sue a private entity under the two statutes, the county raised one and the judge relied on another. Even if you could, both of those go to public entities, not to private. But if you could, that's one road to take to get there. If the state builds a road from Freda to Alexandria, I can take that road, but I can also go to Home City and then to Garfield and then to Alexandria to get there. There's nothing exclusive, and none of the parties, not the district court or the statutes themselves, raise any authorities that say the mandamus route is exclusive.
Well, so that just, I think, brings us back to Judge Smith's question then. So what is your cause of action against the private party here?
We want them to stop constructing this range in a way that will endanger the 15 people that sue. We're looking for...
On what legal ground, though?
Well, the legal grounds is that it's a danger to be firing rounds into somebody's property. The cup itself lays out the protections that need to happen. Those protections weren't done.
Do you have a case where, as I understand, as you're describing your claim, you're arguing that, I think, that the club is violating the terms of the CUP and that therefore you have a cause of action against the club to ask the district court to enjoin its continued violation or in fact to order the nullification of the CUP. Is that what the foundation?
We're asking for three different remedies. And the first is a declaratory judgment that the cup is null and void because the terms of the cup itself say if significant work isn't done within 12 months, it's automatically null and void. The second is to enjoin the club to stop them from continuing this faulty construction. And the third is to revoke the cup, which is already null and void.
But all of those, if I'm understanding your argument, relate not to the issuance of the cup, but to non-compliance by the club with its terms. Is that fair
exactly.
to say?
Exactly. The issue of the issuance of the cup is something respondents brought in that has absolutely nothing to do with this case. That ship sailed 2 years ago.
Okay, so you're talking about you're talking about violations of the cup by the property.
Violations, non-compliance.
Is there any case that you can point us to where a third party directly sued the property owner for violation of a cup, whether they're a neighbor or another member of the public? Is there any case that you found that's like the case that you're asserting here for any remedy, whether it's declaratory relief or injunctive relief?
I cannot, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you.
Let's see, get back here. As I said, four specific claims were made, three specific remedies were requested, and they were all against the club. While the district court has great discretion, that does not include forcing a plaintiff to take a certain route. The plaintiff is master of his own suit. It does not, the court's discretion does not include who the defendant should be, and it does not include the court deciding what the requested remedies should be. The district court erred in granting summary judgment when the plaintiffs made cognizable claims. When the plaintiffs had chosen the defendants, that was actually their right. When they chose to seek declaratory judgment, injunction, and equitable revocation, that was all within the rights of the plaintiff. The first issue, the final issue, should not have been reached at all, as the first two completely disposed of the case. Now, if this court does not address the final issue, since the trial court did, plaintiffs will be deprived of their right to trial that they otherwise would have. The district court said the plaintiffs are stopped from the identical issue was previously and fully litigated in the prior case. The facts in that statement are clearly erroneous, and the legal conclusion is an error. Looking at the four prongs of estoppel, identical issues. In the first case, did the court grant the cup arbitrarily, capriciously, and contrary to the public interest? That was the issue. In this case, 2 years later, did the club violate the cup by not completing significant work within 12 months and by endangering the health, safety, comfort, convenience, and general welfare? The emissions in the second case didn't even exist at the time of the first case. They cannot possibly be the same issues. The second issue, a final judgment on the merits in the first case. There was no final judgment in the first case. There was certainly no final judgment on the issues in this case. The emissions had not yet occurred or been raised. The case was disposed of on procedural grounds, so no issues were reached in that case. But even so, they're separate issues, different issues completely. The third prong, the estopped party must have been a party in the prior case. There are 15 plaintiffs in this case. Only two of them were part of the prior case, and again, on different issues. The fourth prong, a full and fair opportunity to have the issues heard. Not one of the issues, not one raised in this case, has ever been heard by a court. Only one of these issues needs to be missing for estoppel to fail as a bar. Here, not one has been met. The court erred in dismissing this case at all, much less dismissing it with precedence. Lisa Thielen and her fellow plaintiffs pray this honorable court reverse and remand this case for a hearing of the claims and remedies requested, or the claims and remedies requested by amended petition. Barring further questions, that concludes the plaintiff's or the appellant's case.
Thank you, Mr. Novak. Next, we will hear from respondents, beginning with Mr. Anderson. You may proceed, Mr. Anderson.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. Let me first deal with an issue I think is being confused here. One of the basis of the motion that the respondent, that my client made in the district court, was that there was no cognizable cause of action that had been pled. And we also indicated there wasn't really relief against us. What Mr. Novak is talking about is facts that have been pled. That's it. And I've researched the law. I've looked for cases. Really, what you're hearing Mr. Novak say is he has a right to sue Eden Valley. And in that suit, get a declaration that the CUP is invalid, get a declaration that, or get a permanent injunction, get a declaration that they violated it. Nowhere can I find any cause of action, any statute, any common law case that would give any member of the public, I don't care who, a right to sue someone who has a conditional use permit on a claim that they're violating that permit. This court has many times said, and I'm going to apologize, I might have to cite cases. The two briefs seem to argue different things, and most of it came in the reply brief instead of the main brief. But this court has many times said, and I think Walmart was one of the cases, that you need to find a cause of action either in the common law or by statute. There's one cause of action in a statute given for a claim that something under Chapter 394, which deals with the zoning, is being done improperly. It's a mandamus claim. It only occurs under 394.37 subdivision 4, and it says very specifically that what a person may do, a taxpayer of the county, may bring a mandamus action to compel the proper authorities in the county to perform duties they're required to perform under the statutes. And as the affidavit of Mr. Schultz sets forth, one of the duties they have is enforcing and interpreting the ordinance. That includes permits that have been issued under it. But this court has said many times in the All Metro Stability case, 671 Northwest 2nd 905, in the Brugger versus Faribault County Sheriff's Department case, 497 Northwest 2nd 260, you have to find an actual cause of action, either by common law or by statute. And what they also say is this: when the statute gives a specific remedy, that's not going to be expanded by the court. The only way that the plaintiffs could bring a claim here, they couldn't bring one against Eden Valley. And that's what the court keeps saying. The appellants indicate they in their briefs, they don't understand what the court was doing, but the court said time after time after time, there is no cognizable claim. The only claim you could possibly have is mandamus.
Can I switch? Tell you what my concern is relative to the county. The county asserted a defense on grounds of ineffective service of process. So therefore the district court lacks subject matter jurisdiction. District court agreed with you. Why should that, in the normal case, that's going to be a dismissal without prejudice. Why should that not be the case here? And I'm not even sure precisely for the reason that you're describing what the merits decision is here that's dismissed with prejudice against the county, because it's hard. I'm not sure what the claim is given the plaintiff's argument that they're not seeking anything against the county. But I'm not understanding yet why this should not be a dismissal without prejudice, since that's the route that the county chose to take. Could have admitted jurisdiction, but chose not to.
No, I did choose not to because it was totally improper the way it was brought.
Right, and you have a right to do that, but then why is it not a dismissal without prejudice?
Well, because in addition to bringing the motion on the procedural grounds, I also brought a motion for summary judgment on the claims that they were actually, on the facts that they were asserting. And I believe the case law, Mercer versus Anderson and the DeHaze cases that I cited in my briefs, indicate that the district court has wide discretion to determine whether dismissal is with or without prejudice, and whether or not when there's a number of claims brought, like this was captioned as a motion to dismiss pursuant to Rule 12 and for summary judgment under 56, the court has the ability to decide both of them. And I think it's proper to do so, Your Honor.
But Mercer was a service and statute of limitations case. Do you have a case where a district court decided it lacked personal jurisdiction, but went ahead and made a ruling on the substantive merits of a claim and dismissed them with prejudice?
I only have those cases I cited, Judge, and I can't, as I'm sitting here, come up with another one.
Okay. I don't see you're arguing, and it's fine if you didn't. I'm trying to understand. Your argument in your brief, once it gets to the merits, seems to go primarily to whether there are sufficient facts raised around whether the CUP is complied with, et cetera. I don't see you arguing, but maybe I missed it, collateral estoppel.
I didn't argue collateral estoppel, Judge.
Okay.
That was Mr. Lystico for Eden Valley. I chose a different tact. I chose to put in the affidavit of the people responsible for enforcing the CUP. And as you'll see in Mr. Schultz's affidavit, which is documents 45 and 48, it ended up being submitted more than once. And the exhibits there too, A, B, and C, you'll see that he conducted an inspection under the ordinance and found that they had complied with all of the conditions in the CUP, and there were 19 conditions therein.
And is it fair to say, counsel, that I think it is, but tell me if I'm wrong. I mean, the motion was, I think, motion for judgment of pleadings or for summary judgment. The district court's order didn't get to the question of whether there are material, I think you acknowledge this in your briefing, the material issues of fact about whether the CUP has been violated. You cite the case law that we could affirm a summary judgment on any other appropriate ground, even if the district court didn't find or didn't rule on that basis. The district court's order, tell me if I'm wrong, seems to be in substance, with respect to the county, a judgment on the pleadings. Am I wrong about that?
I disagree, Your Honor. And
where did the court need to go beyond the pleadings to rule the way it did relative to dismissing the case against the county?
Well, Your Honor, I believe that the court clearly I'm not going to say clearly, the order is not a model of clarity. But if you look at the statements made on pages 6 and page 7, also on 8 and 9, it's quite clear that the court, in citing the cases it did and in citing Rule 56 and in indicating that no genuine issue of material fact had been raised, that it was ruling on the argument we made, which was, and I think the court said it probably the best, even if Greg Schultz was effective, even if service on Greg Schultz was effective, there are still no issues of material fact on which relief can be granted in this case, and therefore summary judgment is proper. That's a statement right on page 9. And what I've argued and laid out, and I could certainly lay it out again, you know, Rule 5603 says that you need to have an affidavit with admissible facts based on personal knowledge and show you're competent to give that information. There was never anything put in against our affidavit that met that standard.
The reason that you want it to be summary judgment is because you want there to be a decision on merit. I'm wondering why the county isn't satisfied by a dismissal of the case against it on a 12.03 basis.
Because now this is the second time the county's been made a party to a lawsuit concerning this CUP, and I can't cite the page. I brought the wrong transcript home last night, Your Honor. But Mr. Mack clearly indicated that he'll just bring another lawsuit.
The county could not challenge your. So if you want to get to the merits of whether a revocation is warranted or whether there's should be a revocation, I would presume you would argue it should be a mandamus action. There should be proof that the county is not enforcing its CUP. And it should follow that process for revocation, ordering the county to revoke a CUP for noncompliance. I mean, there is a process for that. I'm wondering I'm not exactly sure what you want on the merits decided here that you just would be on that would foreclose a future mandamus case that wasn't brought here to perhaps, and let's just assume there could be evidence of noncompliance to get the county to do its job if that were proved. I'm assuming it's proved.
I my time is up, but let me quickly answer that. And here's the thing. As of September 25, so months before this motion was brought, the county had already conducted an inspection and found that there was no violation whatsoever of the conditional use permit. And that's why I wanted to get and moved for summary judgment. And because these facts were already out there, why should I face another lawsuit or why should the county? And with that, Your Honor, I see my time is up. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Anderson. And next we will hear from Mr. Lystico representing Eden Valley. You have 5 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court and appreciate your attention to this matter. I think the questions that were asked of Mr. Mack and Mr. Anderson go to the confusion the club has. They're not sure exactly what they are getting sued for. They're getting sued for the second time. We agree with the county on service of process on that it required by the plaintiffs a writ of mandamus action that the county, that they feel the county did something wrong. The club has tried to do everything that they've been asked to do by the county. They've gone out, they've asked for the inspections.
Can I ask counsel?
Absolutely.
With respect to the legal claims here, did you move for judgment on the pleadings and for summary judgment?
We did.
Okay, do you see an order where the court needed to move beyond the pleadings in ruling and dismissing the claims against your client? Or was it a failure to state a claim that could be determined on the pleadings?
I mean, the club wants to be done with it, but I'll be honest about my answer to you. I believe the court essentially ruled that the plaintiffs failed to state a claim. Okay. I think the court did go into that. They also did not assert a fact basis on why they would should otherwise be relieved from the motion that we brought for summary judgment. There's never been a cause of action that we quite understand what it is that the club apparently did wrong. You know, I did raise collateral estoppel.
Let's turn to that one, if we can turn to that, because I was a little confused by this. With the collateral estoppel in your brief, on page 19 of your brief, you say the district court narrowly pointed out that the claims regarding two deficiencies in the cup itself were barred by collateral estoppel. Thus, those claims associated with revocation of the cup were dismissed with prejudice under collateral estoppel. I don't really know what that sentence is referring to, the narrowly pointing out two deficiencies in the cup. Can you explain that further to me? I'm not understanding that.
No, and in the time I have, I don't know if I can go to the site in the record, but what the court and what the plaintiff, well, I'll start with what the plaintiff cited in its brief as to the concerns it had with the what they thought were violations of the CUB conditions. They merged and matched, and I think kept together the issue. They did not simply say that the club didn't follow the county conditions on the CUP. They got into, we never liked, I mean, some of the issues with the berm. We don't like that the berm is there. We don't think it's adequate. Those were part of that first lawsuit. Of course, if the club would be told by the county that there's something that didn't meet the requirements of the CUP, the club would do that. They have no problem doing that. But what the plaintiff here brought up is they clearly brought a second bite at the apple. They did not do it in the most clear version to understand exactly what they're saying, but they did what they did and they merged these issues together. We believe that under collateral estoppel that they lose those claims to bring them again. And
you would not think that that collateral estoppel is necessary to your getting dismissal on the pleadings. Is that fair to say?
Correct. I don't think it's absolutely necessary because the plaintiffs didn't even bring cause of action, still confused at exactly what they claim the club did improperly. The plaintiffs raise an argument in the county's response to the plaintiff's response to the county or their reply that they will get to the collateral estoppel issue in a separate brief, apparently. That's what they state. That we'll get to that into a reply having to do with the club. There was never a reply. And I would just, we don't get a third response or a second response, but there is case law. Don't know exactly the pronunciation on this one. Shopakee versus Alexander Smith, 187 Northwest 2nd, 133-135, Minnesota Supreme Court, 1971. And then Leonard versus St. Paul Fire, 263 Northwest 2nd, 389, cite to 390, Minnesota Supreme Court, 1978. If the plaintiffs don't raise that issue, don't cite it in their filings with this court, they have waived that. So they say they're going to get to our argument on collateral estoppel, which we think is very valid. And the court in its order indicated that was a basis on which they dismissed the action of the plaintiffs. And the plaintiffs say they're going to raise it to this court, but they never did. And we feel that's additionally a waiver to the claims or to the arguments that the plaintiffs raise against collateral estoppel. And I apologize, I don't see a time.
Your time actually is up. Mr. Lystico, would you like a moment to wrap up?
No, I'm good, unless there's questions. I think there's a lot of dead trees paper on this one, and we appreciate your time and just ask you to dismiss the claims being raised by plaintiffs.
Okay, thank you for your argument. And Mr. Novak, you have the final word. You have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Can you see the clock on the screen?
I cannot.
No, okay. I can't see it here. Well, I'll let you know when your time is up.
Great.
Thanks.
First, I want to clarify, we're not saying the cup is invalid. We're saying it's null and void. The petition itself, I will acknowledge it is not an example of clarity. Had I written it, I would have written it different. When I looked at it, I said, yeah, there's great potential damage here, and they're trying to stop the damage. I can argue. But essentially, the plaintiffs are afraid of assault and battery. Somebody getting hit with a round or rounds flying through their house. And if there is going to be imminent danger, you can ask for equitable relief to keep that from happening. There's two averments that talk about that danger. And then there's two that look to the cup and say, here, they're violating two things of the cup. We can raise that as averments. One of them directly causes the danger. And the other one is a clear-cut violation. Now, the facts of whether or not the cup has been violated, the district court on a summary judgment motion can't decide the case unless there's no evidence of the one side. Now, respondents properly raised evidence that said, yeah, this, they're mighty fine. They're meeting the standard. But we also put the cup into evidence that has the requirements. And then we put an affidavit into evidence that says, this gentleman said, I have measured it, direct knowledge. Only 3 to 4 feet of the berm are above the level of the road. There is a break of about 100 yards that parallels the road. A bullet could easily strike the vehicle in that 100 yards. The cup says that there's no danger to the traffic or public. He has read the cup. There was no significant work performed on, and that is the requirement, on the proposed range in that first year. All they did is a month after that year was done, bring a couple of loads of dirt. There is certainly facts that contradict, that create an issue here. This was not grounds for a summary judgment based on there being no facts for both sides. Now, on the collateral estoppel, there is a difference between complaining about the requirements of a cup, and then 2 years later, when the requirements of the cup are being done, and they don't meet the cup standard, raising that. That's a complete difference. The berm was, they didn't like the number set for the berm, how high it had to be, so they complained. They said, okay, we have to live with that height, but then that height isn't met. That's a totally different issue. Now, as to the two briefs, I can't give an answer on this, but I wrote two briefs, one to the club and one to the county's brief. Together, they were below the limit, and gave them to my paralegal to submit to the court. If it didn't get there, I apologize, but the collateral estoppel issue was fully briefed. Barring any questions.
Thank you for addressing that. I did look for the brief because I saw a reference to a second reply brief, and there was not a second reply brief filed, FYI, either, with the court. So may not have been served or filed them.
I apologize for that, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Barring any questions, that concludes my rebuttal.
I see no additional questions for you, Mr. Novak. So that completes the argument in this case. The matter is now submitted to the court, and we will issue our decision within the statutory timeframe. Thanks to all of you.